The Skiffy and Fanny Show is listener-supported, which means basically you guys listen and we feel really good about ourselves. But if you'd also like to help us a little bit, you can go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership, get a free book, which is pretty cool, and the bonus is that it helps us a little bit. So go ahead and check that out at audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty and enjoy the episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, yes. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 155. My special guests today are Justin Landon.
Hello, I'm Justin Landon. I'm the editor of Staffer's Book Review, the science fiction and fantasy blog that if you're not reading, you're clearly doing something wrong. I'm also the co-editor of Speculative Fiction 2012, the year's best online reviews and commentary, which came out earlier this spring. That's a collection of all of the best writing that happened online this year. So very excited about it.
Excellent. And my other guest is Jared Shurin.
Hi, I'm Jared. I am the editor of Porno Kitch, which is infinitely less dirty than it sounds, probably to everyone's disappointment. And I'm the co-editor of Speculative Fiction 2012.
Excellent. So I wanted to start just briefly kind of talking about the basis for this collection. You guys did a Reddit a while ago, so I'm sure you've answered some version of this question before, but basically, what made you guys put this collection together? Because it's not a fiction collection, just so everyone knows. It's reviews and commentary, so it's a very different kind of collection than we're used to. It's not quite academic, but it like rides in between that nice line. So what kind of was the impetus for putting this together? And we'll start start with you, Justin. What did you think? And then Jared will jump in.
Yeah, well, we really realized that fiction anthologies just weren't selling, so we thought that nonfiction anthologies would do a lot better. It's really no, clearly that was not the impetus. It all just kind of started one day. I sent Jared an email and I said, "Hey, I have this idea. I was sleeping last night, and which I do most nights, and this idea came into my head of I was trying to think like what were people talking about, because I was on Twitter and I was like, everybody's talking about gender and grimdark and whatever. And I said, what the hell were people talking about in 1992? Like, what were people getting all worked up about in 1992? And I thought about it and I said, I have no idea. And I knew that if I went online, I could probably find all the best fiction that was in 1992. I could use awards lists. I could look at the year's best anthologies from Gardner Dozois and all the other people, and I could figure out what fiction was important. But I couldn't really figure out what was important to the discussion of people like us, people who really engage in the genre. And short of, going and getting to know Secret Masters of Fandom and stealing their fanzines out of their attic, there was really no record of what people were talking about. And so I kind of thought it might be fun to begin an annual tradition of assembling those discussions as sort of a record of what had happened this year and what we were talking about and what the commentary thought was important. So that was the idea. And then I kind of threw it to Jared, who has a little bit of publishing experience and he's getting more all the time. And he helped me put it together. So.
And Jared, you want to add to that?
It helps that both Justin and I, of course, are bloggers, and we're both really pro blogger, which obviously we're pro ourselves and all of that, but
he doesn't mean professional.
No, yes, no, good point. We're fans of blogging, but it means we think really highly of blogging. It's a lot of people that are taking the time because they are so passionate about something to sit down and write 100 or 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 words on something, not for money, not for any greater reason than just because they want to talk about something. And that's pretty amazing. So we wanted to recognize that. And as much as the blogging community is, I think, really supportive and likes to take care of and recognize one another, by taking all of, you know, the best blog entries and the best reviews and commentary and moving it into a different format, we thought we would also bring a completely new audience to everything that was going on online. So people that don't realize that there's this amazing ecosystem of conversation, which is the wankiest thing I've ever said in my entire life. But, as soon as you put something in a book, all of a sudden people start looking at it in a different way. And it's got a sense of permanency and a form that it didn't possess beforehand.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, I think, when people will look at the contributors list to see the kinds of people you've selected. So, there are everything from people who are primarily known for their blogging work, so such as Aidan Mower and some others that are on this list. And then there are people who are known primarily as writers, so people like Mike Cole, who does blog, but obviously he's probably more well known for his I guess you'd call them science fiction novels. I don't know what you'd call them. Fantasy sci-fiction. There we go.
Sci-fiction, yes.
Yeah. There's this kind of mismatch of individuals coming from to this sort of blogging and maybe fan writing world from very different avenues. And I think that's just a really interesting way of doing it, because you could have just had it be all of the sort of the blogger people who are just known primarily for their blogging, but in fact you've kind of gone to other people, gone to a kind of wider range of different kinds of blogging, which I think makes this much more effective as a piece of fan work than sometimes you get with a lot of fanzines, which the experiences don't feel as real because they're people you just don't know, whereas here we know a lot of these people, and so their kind of experiences with the work that they're talking about or that the issues they're relating to maybe seem more real to us. I don't know if that's actually true. I may just be bullshitting.
No, I think you're totally right. I mean, one of the interesting things about the way that the whole blogging world works now is that you have the conversation between authors and fans and nobodies and somebodies. And you have things like Christopher Priest writing about the Arthur C. Clarke Award and sort of throwing a grenade into that particular conversation, or N.K. Jemisin talking about Weird Tales. But then you also have bloggers responding to N.K. Jemisin talking about Weird Tales and Weird Tales responding to that. And that whole ability of people to have a conversation and be heard no matter who they were going into it, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note it, to know that when we were putting the anthology together, I mean, we didn't really think too hard about what makes an author different than a blogger. I mean, at the end of the day, once they start contributing to this conversation online, they're really indistinguishable. And it would be sort of disingenuous of us to say we're only going to do bloggers, you know, quote unquote bloggers, unprofessional bloggers, when some of the best work is being done by people who are professional authors on the outside. So, it would be a lie if I didn't tell you that we did to some degree think about not wanting to overrepresent any one particular subsection. I mean, we were cognizant of how many pros we were putting in there versus how many non-pros we were, but we wanted to make sure that we included both. I think when Joe Abercrombie is writing a review of his own book, I mean, that's about as fanish of writing as you're going to get. And of course, as we all know, anybody who's talked to Joe immediately knows there's no bigger fan of himself than Joe.
No. Well, and it kind of raises the question. I know Justin and I think you and I have had a discussion about this back when you came on for the Hugo discussion. But it does raise an interesting question, which you guys were just suggesting about, you know, this idea that we can easily separate, you know, fanish endeavors from professional writers. So, you know, somebody like, N.K. Jemisin, just to throw out one of the many names on here, who is a professional author as her, I don't know if that's her day job, but she's certainly a professional author. But on the other hand, is also a a blogger who's writing as a fan, and I guess sometimes it becomes it's sometimes difficult to separate the two. Like, how do you separate the pros from the fans? And here, I mean, I think it becomes very obvious when you look at this list that those distinctions are always going to be nebulous, because they're not distinctions that maybe we can ever truly make, where we could separate the pro from the fan, if that makes sense.
I do think that pros have experience and insight into some areas that fans wouldn't. So, I mean, again, talking about, you know, N.K. Jemisin on Weird Tales, she's going to have a very different perspective than someone that's never submitted to Weird Tales. Or, you know, she talks about how Weird Tales influenced her writing and what it meant to her. And then... And so I think her stand on that is going to be different from someone like me, who doesn't encounter it at all. And then, of course, you have the reverse, which is, I think fans are generally more free to talk about books than authors are, because authors are generally restrained in either talking about their own work or in talking about someone else's work because of professional courtesy or whatnot. So whereas folks like us can, you know, savage or praise without any ulterior motive.
Yeah, you really got to wonder what Christopher Priest would have said if he hadn't been a professional author. He really held back. No, but I think you make a really good point, Jared. I mean, if you look at Cameron Hurley, who is a very prolific writer online, both on her own blog and appearing in other places, writing sort of these nonfiction commentary pieces, some of which have been amazing. And the one we included in the book by her is amazing. But she also wrote another piece last year called Publishing is a Meritocracy and Compared It to Casinos. And it was a very interesting piece, but it was a piece that could not have been written by anybody who was not also a professional writer. So because of the experience just wouldn't resonate with somebody like me. And so that's, you know, they have a unique perspective, and it's hard to sort of separate them, but it doesn't make those insider baseball perspectives any less important to the conversation that we're having, particularly with, you know, the way publishing is functionally the gatekeeper for what we end up seeing eventually. You know, I mean, if the kinds of stories that get published are through that mechanism, and we need commentary on it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the thing, people have said this before, but that's probably one of the great things about the internet, is that it's made it easier for authors and people inside the publishing industry to actually talk and interact with people who would be reading their work in a way that never really existed before. So like a fanzine in the old days, maybe once in a while would have had somebody from the inside write a column for them, but... That wasn't how it was done. It was people writing about their fan experiences and whatnot, which are relevant. But now we have this kind of interaction with the industry and the people who make that industry exist by buying their shit. So, and I think that interaction is really good to have the author and the fan actually interacting in this way.
Yeah, somebody actually said to me the other day, they said, Justin, you write a... you were on the industry track of bloggers. And I said, what does that mean? And because I didn't understand it. And she explained it by basically saying that when she looks at blogs, she sees blogs in two very distinct ways. There's blogs that are fan blogs that are functionally about, you know, this is what I love, and they get really into it, and they're all about speaking to other fans. And then there's these other kinds of blogs that she called industry blogs, which are where we're not necessarily speaking to other fans, we're speaking to other people that are engaged in the industry. So, like, when we're providing that criticism or we're doing commentary on the industry or whatever, and there's those two separate kinds of blogs, I thought that was really fascinating. I don't really know what to think about that yet, but I thought it was an interesting dichotomy to draw.
If you look at, and this is just the UK scene, but, you know, the UK genre scene is of course much smaller, but you have, you know, Anne Perry, who's the commissioning editor at Hodder and Stoughton. You have Amanda Rutter at Strange Chemistry, James Long at Orbit. I mean, all three of them started as bloggers and are now commissioning editors for major science fiction imprints here. And it is really interesting because it feels like, in a way, blogging is a way of, I don't know if it's getting known or if it's a way of understanding the industry or interacting with the industry in a way that actually does seem to be helping shape people's careers. Terrifying.
Certainly in the UK, I don't think we've seen nearly the same intermixing in the United States. And I wonder if part of that is regional. You know, the odds of somebody living in London or near London in the UK are much higher than somebody living near New York or in New York here. Our bloggers are scattered across the country. It's not like they can get that personal relationship with the editors that it probably takes to, with the publishers to make that jump. Where in the UK, you're often having events where Anne and James were meeting the people within the industry on a more personal basis. I assume that's probably what the difference is, although who knows, it could be some other larger cultural thing as well.
That's a really good point. No, it does. It is probably that ability to interact with people because we're a little more regionally convenient.
It makes sense. I mean, if you just think about other industries like the film industry, I mean, if you want to be in TV, you primarily need to be near New York. You can't be in like Oklahoma because there's just no way you could financially support yourself to fly out for auditions. Or for movies, you'd have to be near Hollywood to actually get in, and TV too there. But that's kind of the point. There are basically two places you can go to actually meet people and get into this industry, and you can't do it in Oklahoma or Montana.
You say that, but isn't all of Game of Thrones made in Oklahoma?
It may be made there, but they certainly didn't do the casting there. They probably did the casting
in Montana. Montana's where, 24, Glee, and Sex and the City were all filmed. So,
well, and the greatest television show of all time, Highlander, was filmed in Vancouver. So.
This is true. Canada is tearing it up in the TV world, by the way. There are a lot of
Degrassi.
Yes. I love Degrassi. It's a good show. I'm probably going to regret saying that later.
You should.
Why? Is there something wrong with life? Whatever, man. Don't destroy my life. Anyway, okay, so back to the collection and not embarrassing me further. Okay, so one of the things that I think was interesting, there are a number of, I'm going to say this with big, giant, quotey things around it, but controversial figures in your list. I don't know if Liz Burke is actually controversial. I think she just stirs up other angry people. But someone like Foz Meadows, who, if you've read Foz Meadows' blog, is sort of like a slightly more tame version of Requires Hate, but still very aggressive in the message. And I'm curious, what kind of made you go to some of the maybe more aggressive bloggers and the like in this particular collection?
Jared?
Starting with Liz, for example, and she of course is in here for her absolutely fantastic review of the Michael Sullivan book.
Theft of Souls.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember that.
everything that came in here. So Justin and I whittled this down to 50 blog posts from a long list of, I think it was somewhere between 200 and 300. And everything was judged as a piece. So everything had to stand alone. It couldn't be sort of part of a body of stuff. It needed to actually be something that could be taken off of the internet, be a standalone article, and make sense and have a great deal of quality to it. And it also helped that in something like Liz's review, it was one of the most talked about pieces of the year. I mean, it really struck a chord with a lot of people, both defending the book and criticizing the book. And she did an amazing job. It was not a negative review that attacked the author, because that's something we stayed away from. It was a negative review that stuck to the text itself. And it really created a huge amount of conversation. I mean, if there's one sort of disappointment, I guess, in bringing everything to a book form, is that you do lose that sense of conversation. The fact that had, you know, 550,000 comments on it of everyone taking place. But the piece itself, I think, stands alone really, really well.
Well, and I think often the aggressive people, and I use the term aggressive sort of loose, you know, casually.
Quotey things.
I don't mean anything connotative by it or denotative by it, whichever word is appropriate. I mean, those are the people that begin the conversations that Jared and I are so proud to represent here and to be involved in. You know, Liz's review started off a whole conversation about Michael Sullivan's book and whether it was good or not. But I actually thought the better conversation that she engendered by that was the appropriateness of extremely negative reviews and being critical to a point where, to a very far distant point. And I read that review early in the year and I said to myself, God, Liz went way too far. And by the end of the year, I had a conversation. I had realized that she didn't go too far at all. Like, it was a perfectly appropriate level of criticism. And in fact that it was healthy. And that's a conversation that I was able to grow from. And that's what made that post important. And I think a lot of what Foz writes about is the same way. You know, I will say that a lot of what Foz writes, though, would be troublesome for us to put in a book like this, only because she so often is commenting on things that have happened elsewhere. So like Jared said, you know, there was a big issue last year that we completely avoided in the book, which is the ReaderCon issue and the sexual harassment, which we tried very hard to include, but we couldn't find a post that wasn't referencing 15 other posts. And so it became almost impossible to find something that really stood on its own. Particularly from a source that we felt was close enough to it to be worthy for inclusion. So it's tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do recall, I mean, we interviewed Sullivan, I think almost right when Lisberg's post went up or somewhere around there. I can't remember. And I think we asked him, we didn't ask him specifically to respond to her post, but more to ask him how he responds to negative criticism. Because I remember when her post went up and there was a lot of discussion, about what she actually wrote and people disagreeing about, well, you know, I think this about the book, blah, 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 you know, and people arguing about whether the book is good, but also people feeling as though it was a personal attack on him, which I thought was also really interesting because there was a lot of discussion about that at the time. This is, of course, stuff from 2012, so it'd be very interesting to see what you guys put together for 2013 because of what's happened just in the last 6 months. But, yeah. But, I mean, there's certainly a degree to which a lot of the stuff we've already talked about, the way in which they're contributing to a conversation, so Burke's post, less controversial reviews, they're adding to a conversation in a rather profound way, and I think that's really interesting, but also quite important.
Can we talk about 2013 for 1 second?
I don't mind if he says yeah.
Just to be clear, one of the things that Justin and I decided when we began is that we're only going to edit it for 1 year. For everything that we're talking about, because it is a lot of conversations and a lot of perspectives, and there's just so much that's out there, it feels as soon as the responsibility of selecting bits of that conversation sticks with the same two people, it becomes a little too narrow. So every year the editorship passes from one pair of people to another pair of people. So next year, the 2013 volume is actually going to be edited by Anna and Thea from the Book Smugglers. I'm first delighted because you're right, because 2013 already feels far more controversial than 2012. But it'll be really interesting to see what their perspective is and what they think are the sort of the 50 most important things to include in this volume.
And we're already starting to see that they're focused in places that are probably going to be different than ours. You know, I know Anna and Thea are really trying to gin up interest in the YA middle grade blogging community for the anthology to try to reach out to more of the discussions that are happening in that area, which is great. I mean, that was one of the things that Jared and I struggled with. We were trying to think about trying to include some YA middle grade, and we both looked at each other and were like, well, we didn't get a lot of submissions, and we don't read them, so we didn't know where to look if they were out there. So it's great that Anna and Thea are trying to bring in that new community. You know, the reality is, like, Jared and I read very similarly, both our fiction, but probably more importantly, our nonfiction that we read online. I mean, we kind of follow the same blogs. We kind of follow the same people on Twitter to some degree. And other than Jared's obsession with weird early century crime fiction, you know, our interests sort of reflect one another. And if we did it again, I would worry that the same, not the same 50, but we would certainly maybe get the same 25 and then 25 new people. But we wanted to make sure that we got sort of 50 new things every year. I'm sure we'll have some repeaters, but hopefully not too many. And we're going to have to start thinking about who's going to edit this thing in 2014 or 2015, whatever it is. And the good thing is Jared will continue to publish it, I hope, and well into the future. And I will sit on my couch and lob grumpy old man suggestions.
It was actually what you've kind of, both of you are kind of discussing, just raised a different kind of question, which is, you know, with a kind of annual fiction anthology with some exceptions, but, you know, you think of like Gardner Dozois, or Dozois, I don't know how you say his last name, but his collections, right, he does the best of every year. But those collections of fiction, like they reflect his particular kind of in a way his particular taste in fiction, and so in a way you're going to his best of collection for whatever year you're in because it's a reflection of what he thinks, and so it's almost like you're reading a magazine, right? Whereas this, you kind of take it in a different direction, where because you're going to be switching who is viewing it every year, there's actually going to be a completely different editorial possibly different editorial direction because of the people that are involved, which perhaps will change, will give it a kind of different kind of freshness in the sense that it'll change. It'll be like those, who's the company that does the like best American short stories of the year collections? And it's always a different, like, high profile author or critic who selects them. I can't remember but every time it's a different perspective on the fiction. And in here, you'll be doing the same kind of thing, which I think will be really interesting because of the, you know, like you were discussing, the kind of conversations which might suddenly appear. So perhaps YA conversations, and maybe at a future point, you'll have people who are part of the discussions about romance and sci-fi, the sci-fi romance field, which there have been quite a few posts about that this year, too. So it'd be interesting.
Yeah, our next step is we're going to try to get some very old people to do it, and it'll actually be all print, no online. Maybe that'll be the future thing. now Justin's an ageist.
I don't even know what to make of that.
edit it out.
No, I'm gonna leave that in. That's gonna be for posterity. So just to kind of change tracks just a little bit, and we can kind of jump back and forth. But obviously, you both are part of a variety of things. But in particular, we'll start with you, Justin. You've got the Staffers Book Review, and you, of course, like to cause trouble on it. So I want you to talk about that. Why do you cause so much trouble?
I've been known to cause some trouble. I mean, not too much trouble. It kind of goes in waves. I mean, I think May was a very – or March – April, one of those months, was a particularly troublesome month where I wrote the Hugo Post and then I wrote the Nightshade Post, and that was kind of a troublesome time. You know, for the most part, I try to be productive, and I hope that I'm sort of pointing out some things that are worth talking about. I mean, I always find, like, people reacted sort of negatively to the Hugo Post, and there were some things in there that were worth reacting negatively to, but at least people started to talk about it, and that's usually what I'm trying to accomplish. The other reality is, you know, I don't really consider myself a fan all the way. I don't really consider myself – I mean, I'm certainly not part of the industry, nor do I really want to be. So it's kind of a good position for me to be in that, like, if I piss some people off, like, you know, whatever. Like, I don't really have a dog in the fight. I'm just here to talk about the stuff that I am excited about and, you know, want to talk about. So that's what I try to do. One exciting thing that's coming up is I'm going to I'm joining Tor.com to start doing a reread of Joe Abercrombie's books, which should be very exciting. I'm looking forward to doing that. And I may say some controversial things that piss people off in that too, which might get me fired by Tor now that I think about it, but whatever.
Oh, burning your bridges. That's a good way. That's a good way. Okay. Well, what was it that kind of got you into blogging in the first place? Was it just the desire to talk about stuff you wanted to talk about? Or I mean, was there something that influenced you to do it?
I was bored, mostly. No, I really mean that. It's like I was bored. I mean, I was a big fan of science fiction fantasy growing up. I went away from it for a really long time. I came back to it. I was reading The Quantum Thief by Hanno Rajaniemi, and I got like an early copy of it for some reason. I think I won a contest on Goodreads or something. And so I just decided to write a review for it, because when you do things, when you win a book on Goodreads, you have to review it. And so I did. And I thought I would just start writing reviews sort of as a way to sort of get myself writing again, because I had stopped. I mean, I wrote a lot when I was younger, and I had stopped as I became a professional, and I was writing a lot at work. I mean, I write so much at work, and but it wasn't writing for me, so I decided to start writing for me, thinking that I would start writing fiction or something after the fact, but that never really happened. And so I just started writing a lot of nonfiction, and one thing led to another. And then, like, you start getting traffic, and you're like, ooh, I got 50 hits this week. And it's like, and so you're like, I'm going to get 500, you know, and then you're like, I'm going to get 5,000. And it's just this constant sort of, it feeds itself. And next thing you know, it's like you're competing with yourself. And it's, I mean, really, it just sort of filled a time in my life where I needed an extra hobby. You know, who doesn't need more hobbies?
You should not pay attention to your traffic. That's a death trap.
I'm going to guess Jared has a much more like, the word I'm looking for, like, loftier ambitions and goals with why he started his blog, but maybe not.
Oh, I hate lofty ambitions with blogging. Like, it's a huge pet peeve, right? I mean, we're not paid. We're not like journalists. So we're not on some sort of like moral crusade, or we don't have anything along those lines. We are actually just doing it to have fun. And so it really, I don't know, it really kind of winds me up when people talk about their like blogging missions and stuff like that. Like, no, if you're not in it to have fun, I'm not sure why you're doing it. But
yeah. And I mean, maybe at its basis, people are blogging because they want free books, but like that might've been awesome like 5 years ago. But I mean, the free book gravy train is kind of drying up. I mean, they're, you know, so,
not for me. I don't mean that, like, I'm not bragging. Like, I get books sent to me, and I don't even know where they come from sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I get some, but, I mean, not nearly as many as I got before. It just seems like the hard copy train is sort of slowing down, which is natural.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I think it's, for the publisher and for reviews, is sometimes a good thing, because they get you the book quicker for the digitals, but there is a lot more push to do the digital books. My only problem with that is they've been using this NetGalley system, and oftentimes they put these like really kind of odd restrictions on the file, so it goes, you lose it after like a couple months, and it's like, well, what if it takes me longer to get to that book, or what if I want to read it later? You know,
but yeah, I'm not going to admit to what I do to those files to make that not happen.
Oh well, I know. Yeah, so, you'll have to teach me.
But the reality is that I'm actually kind of glad that publishers have scaled that back to some degree. I mean, I think blogging is when you get as many free books as you do, or people start sending you things, you fall into the habit of only reading what you're sent, which, as we've noticed recently, and reminded by the Tor UK post that went up the other day by, is it Julie Crisp? Is that who wrote it, Jared?
Yep.
Yeah. So she wrote the post about sort of like, you know, we're not publishing as many women as we'd like to, and here's why. And they sort of said that it's because we're not getting enough submissions, or we're not getting enough this. And there was some anger about that post, because it sort of seemed to be indicating blame that women aren't submitting enough. And regardless, I mean, that's a whole different argument I'm not going to get into here. But, you know, if I only read what I'm sent, I'm going to read a lot of men writing epic fantasy.
Yeah. Unless you explicitly tell them, yeah, that's
and
not
I do
what I want,
some,
yeah.
And sometimes I do. Sometimes I go out and solicit and ask for stuff. But also, like, you know, I like to buy things, and I have found myself more and more. It's funny. It's like when I first started blogging, if I got a free book, I was going to read it, you know. And I was, you know, I was so excited to get more books. And now that it's sort of a couple years later, I'm now more like, if you send it to me, it'll go on the pile. And if I want to read it, I'll read it. But, like, I'm just as likely to go out and buy a book. You know, like, I just bought K.J. Parker's Colors and Steel, and it's amazing.
Yes, it is.
Not to sidetrack this by talking about K.J. Parker, Jared and I's favorite subject.
Seriously, but, let's just do that for the next hour or so.
But, you know, I went out and bought that one, and I find myself, you know, buying more books these days, which I noticed. I don't know if you noticed this, Jared, but that seems common with bloggers. Like, as they, you know, the first year, like, they're just desperate for review copies, and then the next year all they do is read review copies, and then, like, by their third year, they're buying as many as they're getting, and it's because they, you know.
Have you seen, I think, Liz and Mark from My Favorite Books?
Okay.
They put up, I mean, they, you know, did the thing where they were about a year ahead of me and sort of the blogger, whatever, how long they've been doing it. And they put up a photo that's like, we're stopping taking no more review copies, none. And they had a photo of just a storage unit that was floor to ceiling and just wedged in every possible way. And these were all like brand new review copies of things. And they were just getting so many. And it goes back to the fun thing. Like, when all of a sudden you feel like you have to read things and you're supposed to read things and things like that. And it's just not fun anymore. And you need to do whatever it takes to keep the fun going.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Like, there's a reason why I don't put my address or a PO box up for people to just send stuff to me, because I would be in the same boat. I get a lot of books for review, and I don't review as often as I really would like to. So I tweet a lot about stuff that I like, but it would be sort of overwhelming, and it would get to a point where I would never get to read anything I want to read, which sometimes I feel like I'm at that point anyway, because I divide my reading time between books I want to review and books that I'm reading for school. Which neither of those is fun after about 6 months of doing that for straight. So you kind of have to take a break. So I'll read some, you know, like I read The Hunger Games in like 3 days because I wanted to read something that was popcorn. And that's exactly what that is. It's a popcorn book. But it does get, I think, overwhelming. I can't imagine having a storage unit of like just review books. That's insanity.
Yeah, I actually got into the habit of just, I would host like a giveaway on my blog, and I'd be like, the two people I pick, I'm going to send you 20 bucks. I did that a couple of times. So, I mean, within the U.S., you can send a box of 20 books for 10 bucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ooh.
Oh, no. They're coming for you, Jared.
Sorry, I should go.
No, it's okay.
it's the Bobbies, or whatever they call them.
Coppers.
What do they call police in London? Don't they have a name for them?
There are several names.
Some of them probably not so nice.
None of which I'm comfortable repeating on the air.
Fair enough. Okay, so, well, we've been going for about a half hour, roughly.
We should have Jared talk a little bit about The Lowest Heaven. His new book is coming out. It's really cool.
Yes. Why don't you actually tell us about that? Tell us about The Lowest Heaven.
Hold on, I need to PayPal Justin $20.
Is that your arrangement?
Yes, that's right. Every time.
It's just me feeling guilty because I haven't finished the last two stories, so I haven't written a review yet, so I'm trying to get him some love.
Aww.
That's, well, as long as you like the last two stories, I suppose. Speculative Fiction is published by Jurassic London, which is the publishing company that my wife and I set up 2 years ago. All of our stuff is not for profit. The authors or the editors, people involved pick charities, and whatever the proceeds are, they go to the charity. And one of the things we do is that we write, well, we commission anthologies of original fiction in partnership with museums and charities and sort of crazy cool institutions. The one that just came out in July is called The Lowest Heaven. It's science fiction, and it's in partnership with the Royal Observatory, which is kind of a dream come true. Fortunately, it was also a dream come true for 17 really, really, really incredible science fiction authors as well. But it's just out, so it's structured around the solar system. So we start with a story about the sun, and then a story inspired by Mercury, all the way through to the very last story, which Justin clearly hasn't gotten to yet, is James Smythe writing about Voyager in a very interesting way. And the whole thing is illustrated with photography and art from the collection of the Royal Observatory, and it was launched there, and it's really cool, and everyone should buy it because it's really good stuff for a very good cause.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of really people that I think listeners would be familiar with, so people like Alistair Reynolds, Adam Roberts, E.J. Swift, John Courtney Grimwood, Martin Karen Newton, Karen Warren, Lavi Tidar, just to name a couple. Oh, you have an S.L. Gray in here.
Absolutely.
Holy cow.
S.L. Gray are amazing. So S.L. Gray, as S.L. Gray, had a short story in our first anthology, which was fantastic. It was something we did with the Tate Britain. And then basically either Lewis or Sarah or S.L. Gray have been in everything we've done since then, which is kind of the luckiest thing ever because they are amazing. But the S.L. Gray in this one is...
it's really good. That's an amazing story.
It's a combination of sort of Mean Girls and Event Horizon, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome.
Let's just say America's Top Model plays a significant role.
That's incredible. All right, I'm making sure to add this to my wish list, right?
I will say that's a really an amazing story, Jared. I actually meant to tweet you that the other day because I finished that story, and it's really fantastic.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad you like it. They are totally nuts. I mean, absolute pleasure to work with, but they write things from angles that you just don't expect.
I'm assuming you've read their novel?
Yes, absolutely.
Mole? Yeah.
So, like K.J. Parker, definitely someone very happy to get derailed and talk about how wonderful they are at length.
Yeah, I read the novel, the most recent novel, and it's pretty fucked up, to put it lightly. I love that book, but it's there are times when I'm like, where am I? What the hell is going on anymore? This is a scary place. So
yes, it is.
It should be a movie. That would be a terrifying movie.
Oh, it'd be amazing. Their new one is out, I think, in October. The New Girl, which seems just as absolutely crazy and fucked up as all the other ones. And
Has any other stuff hit the U.S.?
I'm checking Amazon right now. I don't think no, because when you search S.L. Gray, you get E.L. James for Shades of Gray. They have a page, but you can get Kindle editions of some of their stuff.
Okay, I'll have to look at it. I remember the mall came out. I really wanted to read it, but it wasn't available. I don't import books. It's kind of one of those things.
Yeah, they sent me a copy for review, and I ended up writing a paper on it. So, yes, I love that. It was a good book, but I think it comes out from Corvus. It says Atlantic here, but I don't know. Maybe Corvus is like a subset of some company. No.
Yeah, they distribute over here.
Okay. But it doesn't seem like you can only get a Kindle edition unless you want to get a used copy of get the original edition. That awful paperback edition's got terrible cover.
The original cover is so good, the hardcover that has like the text messages hidden in it and things like that. It's such a nicely designed book.
Yeah, and it's kind of creepy. And the main character,
speaking of covers in The Lowest Heaven, the cover that they had done by Joey Hi-Fi is pretty amazing.
I'm not sending you another $20.
It is actually quite a cute cover. I mean, it's simple, but it's kind of got that like elegant simplicity.
It is astounding. It is by the great Joey Hi-Fi, and he based it on an 1853 banner that's hanging in the Royal Observatory in the National Maritime Museum. And he sort of updated it. So the whole cover folds out, and there's actually sort of a fold-out map that came with the hardcover. That's the entire solar system, plus tiny little bits from the stories that he sort of illustrated into the art as well, which is just spectacular.
Yeah, so basically what you're saying is people need to go buy this.
I am, and if I'm not saying it, Justin is. Which
do you guys have any? Do you guys have any more hardcovers left? Are they all sold out?
The hardcovers sold out within. We sold 95 of the 100 at the launch, and then the 5 sold within, I think, 24 hours afterwards.
But there are paperbacks and Kindle editions, and you can go to Kobo to get, I guess, editions for other readers.
That's correct.
Yeah. Because I'm guessing you guys have a hell of a time getting anything on BNN.
That is very, very true.
Yeah, I've heard based from a lot of people that even like indie authors, it's like a pain in the ass to get anything on the Barnes & Noble marketplace. Which
it is.
Yeah.
It is extraordinarily difficult from the UK. I think they tried to make it a little easier recently, but it's really interesting because I don't buy from Amazon anymore. It was sort of a New Year's resolution. But as a publisher, even a very, very small one, it is impossible to do business without selling on Amazon. And if we took our books off of it, we wouldn't be able to sell anything full stop. So it's a really weird world right now. And that is another thing I can rant on about for hours.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the reality is Barnes & Noble is just doing so well that they just don't need your business.
Yeah.
That's bull crap.
I'm waiting for them to call. They can call. They know where I am. I wait by the phone.
Yeah. Oh, I like Barnes & Noble. I own a Nook and a Nook HD Plus. But, ooh. Yeah, they don't know how – they're not very good at marketing book things. Just not – no. Sorry, I'm a user. I love their thing, but they're not that great. Although I'll admit that the browsing on the Nook HD Plus is a lot better than on the classic Nook. So you have it's a little bit better, but they're still not they haven't figured it out. So, which is why Amazon is destroying the universe right now. Anyway, okay, sorry. That has nothing to do with anything we've been talking about today, and that's probably very boring. So, all right. So really quick, before we kind of close out and then you guys will go about with your lives and forget that you ever did this until you get a random email from me saying that it's up and you can read it. Really quick, what have you got coming out soon, Justin? Like, what can we expect from you in the near future?
That's a good question. It's a fair one. It's hard to say. You know, people always ask me, like, I get these emails from a publisher occasionally, and they'll be like, oh, we'd really like if you, you know, would you do a guest post from this author, or would you, you know, would you put our cover up or whatever? And, or like, do you have time? And I'm like, man, I plan my posts like 2 days before they go up. I mean, there is no, like, I'm not one of those people that like writes something and sits on it. That's why I've never submitted to like Strange Horizons or any of these other like magazines. Cause I have no patience. Like I finished writing something and I put it up. So I do have one thing that I've kind of been working on for a while, and it's a piece loosely titled The Writer as a Meme. And it's kind of a short essay discussing how I think that the writer within the SFF community is becoming sort of absurd, that you'll go to a convention, you'll go to a gathering, and everybody there will tell you they're a writer. And I'm like, really? Like, what have you written? And of course, they haven't written anything. But within our culture, the term writer has cachet, and so people are using it just because they write. You know, they write on their own time, but they're not published, or they've not even self-published. You know, they just have works in progress. And like, I think that's sort of a disturbing trend. That you know, the only people that buy short fiction magazines or even anthologies in some cases are people who want to be published in them. And so it's kind of a weird piece. I'm still working on it, but I hope it'll come out soon. And then I mentioned the tour.com reread, which I'll be starting very soon. That starts at the beginning of August. And that's kind of all. I mean, I've got a couple of reviews coming out. I'm going to talk about how amazing Mark Lawrence's Broken Empire trilogy is here very soon. And I just redesigned the website as well, which Stavridge Book Review just got a facelift. So.
Yep, I just saw that. It looks very cute.
cute.
I'm not sure if that's what you were going for, but I'm going to say
I will point out that Jared, when he previewed the site, often told me that my fonts were too cute and that I needed to be less cute and more aggressive in my fonting. So
I think I used the word adorable with one of the typefaces.
Oh, well.
Oh, that's kind of cool. You have like an animated banner.
Yeah, so there you go.
I'm like putting my cursor off and on it really quick.
I am an amateur web designer. I built that all from the ground up.
Whoa, it rises.
That's what she said.
All right, and of course, Jared, you've got Pornokish and all that stuff, but what can we expect from you, say, in the next so-and-so time?
Like Justin, all of my reviews are carefully written 40 to 60 minutes before they go live. I am wrapping up a Tor.com reread of KJ Parker, and probably more excitingly are from Jurassic, the next volume of original fiction is coming out in October. It's called The Book of the Dead, and it's about mummies. Our partner for this one is an organization called the Egypt Exploration Society, who have been around since the 19th century and are exactly what they sound like. They're completely amazing. And it's got Paul Cornell, Gail Carriger, Will Hill. I mean, it's an amazing lineup. And that's out in October. More anthologies and whatnot next year and all sorts of exciting stuff. But I think October is as far as I can look right now.
Fair enough. All right. Well, so everybody should go check out the Speculative Fiction 2012 collection. You should go check out Pandemonium. I think it's pandemonium-fiction.com.
That's it.
Yep. To go check out the Lost Heaven and get that. You should go to Saffer's Book Review. I'll make sure there's links to all of this stuff so people can actually find it. But go check out all that stuff. Go buy books. And then when you're done buying those books, you should buy at least 10 more because the industry needs all your money.
Yes. So. Also us.
Yeah, also them. Yeah, so really useful time for your money. So thank you both for joining me and talking about, you know, the collection and talking about your other work and blogging and those kinds of things. I really appreciate it. So thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
And thank you, Jared.
Thank you. This is great.
And I guess we'll see whoever listens to this show the next time. So bye. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
Pass in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you, always.
End of line.